My second guest on the programme is one of those who serves their country and son, whether it be in this country or one of the most dangerous places in the world. Please welcome the now retired, still very active, Lieutenant Colonel Tom Jollies, DSO. Colonel Jollies, welcome to my programme. I trust you had a good journey down from the lakes.
Yes, thank you. Trains were on time, as of course they should be.
Now, you were a career soldier, serving mostly in the Middle East. Tell us something about that.
Well, before that I was educated at Rugby, you know. I did fairly well, but never fancied a job behind a desk somewhere in a stuffy office. We men in the family had always been in the services, going way back. My father made Major General and served with distinction in the First Afghan War of 1878. Whereas my grandfather was a Navy man who was killed in action during the taking of the Taku forts off the China coast in 42. So it was only natural that I followed the family tradition. On leaving school, I became an officer cadet at Sandhurst and served my time with distinction. After I'd done the required year with an English cavalry regiment, I left England as a Bengal Lancer to serve in the Indian Army. Actually, I had hoped to go to Nella Hall and become a military trumpeter, but I failed the audition. I think I was pretty good, but Father didn't approve. I've always suspected that he put the kibosh on it.
You never married, I believe.
No. There were girls, of course, especially when I was younger, but I thought it not really fair on a wife of a soldier on almost permanent active service. The army was my wife and family. As for now, well, I suppose I'm much too set in my ways. Bit of an old grouch, you might say.
I know you are very modest when it comes to your exploits, but we would like to know something about them.
Well, as I said, I went to serve in the Indian Army and I became involved on the Northwest Frontier, fighting against the Pathans. Damn fierce lot they were. Best not to get captured by them. We were still horse soldiers then, as the name suggests, still charging in like the old light brigade. There was a lot of skirmishing around the Khyber Pass area, and that was where I won my DSO in 1908. It was later presented to me by the then Viceroy of India, a Lord Minto. Mind you, there were a lot of lads who deserved it as much or more than I did. Things didn't always work out the way they should in the British Army. It's the class system at work, you know. There were other momentous occasions at which I was present. The regiment was represented in the funeral procession of Queen Victoria in 1901. I felt very honoured to be taking part in that. Homage to a great queen, you know. Then in 1911, we formed part of the March Past at the succession of King George V as Emperor of India during the Delhi Durbar. That was a great day. Full dress uniforms, you know.
But you were not confined to India during your service days.
Oh, no. We were very much involved in the Palestine business and guarding the Suez Canal. Then there was Mesopotamia and Gallipoli against the Turks. That was a bloody war. We fought a lot of that as dismounted troops because of the terrain. Horses were on the way out anyway. Things were changing fast. It was the beginning of an end of the era, but I'm very glad to have served alongside the Australian Light Horse, who did amazing efforts out there. We finally overcame Johnny Turk after Jerusalem. And in September 1918, we marched triumphantly into Damascus. During all of that time, I never received so much as a scratch. But the mosquitoes got me in the end, I'm afraid. You could hide from the bullets, but not from those little devils. The malaria got to me, and they pensioned me off at the age of 45. I went back to the lakes and bought a little cottage, which a woman cleans once a week for me. Otherwise, I look after myself.
You retired from the army, but not from active life.
Yeah, that's right. Soon got fed up just hanging around, gardening and so on. It wasn't long before I became a justice of the peace and a local councillor. That takes up quite a bit of the time. Then I was invited to become master of the hunt for the area, but there was still something missing. Then one day, during a long, hot spell, there was a fell fire. Fortunately, it wasn't too serious, but nothing was done. There is no fire service within miles. So I thought, why not start a volunteer fire and emergency service? People are very much on their own up there, you know. Hardly anyone has a telephone. It could be hours before help would arrive. So I organized a group of the younger lads to listen for the coach horn signals. When they heard the signal, they in turn would sound their horns and rendezvous at my cottage in cars or lorries. It has been quite successful, saving one or two valuable properties. Of course, the men make a bit of fun of me and my military ways behind my back. They think I don't know. They're privately calling me Sergeant Major, dolts. But I don't mind. I've been called a lot worse in the army by the lower orders. The main thing is that we get the job done, and I think they take a bit of pride in doing it.
You had a bit of firefighting to do with James Turner.
Yes, hadn't rained for weeks. Pearls were like tinder. Some fool trippers stopped for a picnic on the Dundale Road, probably left a cigarette burning, came to admire the country and promptly destroyed it. If it hadn't have been for those children sending a pigeon to Beckford so that James could warn me, we would have been too late. The farm buildings would have gone as well. Those children were very resourceful. Pigeons, eh? I remember we used to use them in the military, bringing back a few memories, that does.
Then there was an occasion when you and your men went on a bit of a goose chase looking for a missing person.
Yes, I remember that rather too well, as will some of the other leading lights of the district, namely the postman, the doctor, and most of the local police force. I was dozing in my own deck chair when a call came through from Beckford. It was Miss Ruth going on about her great aunt Maria, who had gone off in James's car with Billy Luthwaite driving. Billy was so frightened of her that he forgot to check for fuel. Consequently, they soon ran out of the stuff. She sent him back with a flea in his ear to get some. However, when he got back, she was gone. He looked around for her, found nothing, so drove back to the house. As I said, Miss Ruth came on the telephone to report her missing. I swung into action, called my men in the usual way, and spread them around the lake. I told them to use the old hunting call if they spotted anything. View halloo!
And did you find her?
I had the men go around the lake, and by this time the police were also involved. Billy's brother Sammy, being the local Bobby, called in his sergeant and another constable to join the search. Then some of my men spotted her in a small sailing boat with two children, heading for Beckford. So everyone went back there and gathered on the lawn, including the postman and the doctor, who was worried about something. Up they came to the lawn and I helped the lady out.
Was she pleased and grateful for everyone's concern?
Pleased? Grateful? Ha! I should say not. She started on me first. I've been under fire many a time. This was a barrage that I'd never experienced. By the way, she's not here today, is she? then she laid into the other protagonists, one by one. She was that mad that I had to take most of the blame. The main thing was that she was safe. Not long after that, she left to catch her train. I offered to take her in my car, but she would not have it. But although heavily defeated, I went down, guns all blazing, so to speak, and sent her off with three rousing cheers and a mighty blast from all the hunting horns.
And after all that?
Well, I continue to sit on the bench, do my council work, hunt with hounds, and doze in the deck chair, half hoping the telephone will ring. But on the other hand, hoping it will not, because it usually means some poor soul is in trouble.
Well, time is pressing, and I must move on with my thanks to Lieutenant Colonel Tom Jollies, who is living proof that soldiers do not simply fade away, but continue to serve their country, even in times of peace.